All right, a few announcements before we begin. Just a reminder that the annual business meeting is scheduled. Actually, I guess it's about a month from today, February 11th. If you plan on attending, you must be a member of the local body here for that. Secondly, there is a dinner at Rich and Dina's next Sunday, the 21st, at 5 p.m. They have asked if you would see Dina, if you want to bring a dish. And I think it's, how many did you say is having?
18
people. So if you're bringing something, bring a lot. Don't show up there with six little smokies. And do I have to tell you this? No, I'm kidding. But yeah, so plan, I mean, if you just be aware that if you're bringing a dish, you need to bring enough for a bunch of people. And also, lastly, we would like to get a couple of volunteers to handle recording the Bible classes. There isn't a whole lot to it. Obviously, you sit here and push two buttons and start them, and they run. Pretty much, that's about all you have to do. There's a little more to it than that, but I don't know what all's involved. See Rich or Dina about the meat deal. And also, Rich is in charge of this, too, so see him if you're interested in recording. And again, we need somebody that's here most of the time. We've got people who can record, but if you're not here, it doesn't help us. So we want to get people who can, because we're going to be making some changes. As I did tell you, I think I mentioned, we're looking into security. We've obviously started locking the door. As things progress, we will keep you informed of that. We may be building a compound just so we can... No, I'm kidding. Run the other way. When you start hearing compound. So at any rate, yeah, we need a couple of people to record, though. So, okay. So see Rich if you're interested in applying in that area. All right. Back here now to Isaiah. We're working on verse 2. A harsh vision has been shown to me. The treacherous one continues to deal treacherously, and the spoiler continues to spoil. Go up, O Elam. Lay siege, O Medea. I have made an end of all the groaning she has caused. And the way he makes an end of it is by putting an end to Babylon herself. That's how he does it. He takes her off the stage of history. So we were into this. We stopped here, I believe, with point 9. We're dealing with these two, this construction that's identical in both cases. The first part, articular participle, again, comes from the verb abagad, treacherous, which describes those whose outward appearance or demeanor masks some less than honorable realities. Again, it's used of those who offer verbal assent to God's plan, even praise, but who then betray that profession by their actions. And then B, it is also applied to those who use benevolent and conciliatory language to others while having malicious intentions in store for their victim. Judges 9:23. Verse 23, then God sent an evil spirit between Abimelech and the men of Shechem. And the men of Shechem dealt treacherously with Abimelech, so that the violence done to the 70 sons of Jerubbaal might come, and their blood might be laid on Abimelech their brother, who killed them, and on the men of Shechem, who strengthened his hands to kill his brothers. And so the men of Shechem set men in ambush against him on the tops of the mountains. And they robbed all who might pass by them along the road. And then it was told to Abimelech. And Abimelech, again, that's translated like a proper name. And it may be a proper name, but the word just actually means my father was king. And it may be just a title, like a prince. It may just be a title. But that doesn't really matter. The point is, obviously, the treachery ambush would be a part of a treacherous approach to all of that. So the fact that this term is applied to prophetic Babylon is indicative of the types of treachery and betrayal that have become all too commonplace in America's foreign policies. And again, the average American stays woefully ignorant of these things. It's gotten to where the government and the businessmen, the merchants, do all this out in the open now because there's really no fear in them any longer. There's nothing to be afraid of. The American people are not a threat, and they know this. And very much so, it's a matter of keeping the people under control, under their power. Again, I happened to see it, the movie wasn't as good, I didn't think it was a book. But under 1984, and you had these television screens everywhere, constantly blasting the news propaganda at you. All the news that's fit for you to hear anyway. And so these news programs, all of this, 24-hour news, just keeps the American people inundated under information overload. And every program is the same. They all treat you like you've never heard any of this news at all before ever. So if you watch like our local channel, Channel 7, WUSP as I call it, WWSB, shows you watch, you'll see the same news program, the exact same segment, 4, 5, 6 times over the course of 2 days. Because one, they don't really have any news. And I'm sorry, I don't care about a dog falling in a lake in Michigan. How does that affect me? And how is that news? I'm sorry, how is that news? And how does that affect me in Florida? And so again, much of it's just designed to keep the mind disengaged and listening to this drivel. All the time, you got these talking heads constantly. I'll go to the gym, and I'm there working out. They got a bank of televisions right in front of you. And, of course, they got the little deal. You can set your little ear thing to where you want, if you want to listen to it. But when I'm there around noon, I think there's 3 news local channels on with the news, 13, 7, ours. And I think maybe and they have ESPN on one. And the other 3 are 3 channels of talking heads. CNN, whatever the other channels are, I don't know. And then of course, to balance all that out, you have the vapid Hoda and Kathy Lee. That's also one. So I stand there and I look at this and I thought, this is what people are watching. This is what they're listening to. And it's old. Well, 11 here, any serious research will reveal that so much of American wealth is derived from the exploitation of foreign workers, foreign natural resources, and foreign capital. And 12, a significant number of the modern comforts and the myriad of luxuries enjoyed by many Americans since World War II. Now, on the one hand, as believers, we don't have to feel guilty about some of this. Well, obviously, as believers, we're not involved in this at some level. However, our leadership is, and we have to be aware of what they do and what they've done at some level. So many of these have come at the expense of a number of other countries around the world. In 13, one can readily investigate what our foreign policies and activities have accomplished in such places as nationalist China, Syria, Korea, Vietnam, Iran, Guatemala, Turkey, the Congo, the Philippines, Nicaragua, Bosnia, Somalia, Afghanistan, and other nations. And even, there are nations, again, that list is not exhaustive by any stretch of the imagination. And in 14, one real problem regarding the disruption of the normal international order surfaced when the American people allowed the federal government to wage unprovoked wars of aggression at will around the world. Where is the outcry? The outcry is the federal government isn't taking care of me. That's the outcry. Not that our government has engaged in essentially just random violence. If our government was a person, they'd be in prison. But they're not. And they'd be in prison for a lot of things. Number one, they'd be in prison for their economic behavior. This business of borrowing money. They'd be in prison for that. Failing to pay their bills. But they'd be in prison for their behaviors towards these other countries too. And again, we have this politically correct speech that we use to mask all this. And this is, again, very much reminiscent of Newspeak out of 1984. We use euphemisms to make it sound nicer. We no longer have illegal aliens. We have dreamers. Wait a minute. These people are criminals. They have broken the law. And no, they're just dreamers. You're against the dreamers, aren't you?
Oh, well, that's just a way to put it, to where the average normal person who thinks the right thing is villainized or demonized. We have peacekeeping forces, i.e. jackbooted thugs. We have a problem of shock and awe. That means bomb the hell out of you until you are bombed into non-existence. We have all these types of these words that we use to mask what we're really doing. And that, unfortunately, is not good. And that's, again, that's the reason for this judgment. And we brought it on ourselves. Our nation has. So one real problem, again, when we allowed this, we should force the president and Congress to get every troop out of every country that we are not haven't been invited into. But we're not going to do that. Because this is a violation, first, of our Constitution. The president does not have the right or the law or the privilege or the power to declare war unilaterally. Has to be done by Congress. Well, it should be clear, point 15, that every president since John Kennedy has waged these wars. This is newspeak. Wars are actually often unprovoked aggression, waged by means of illegal, undeclared acts using American tax dollars. So, why do we have all these wars? We're at war. How many places are we, quote, at war, according to the media? And that's another whole issue we'll get into at some level. Media complicity in all of this. Where's the outrage? The Fourth Estate is supposed to protect the people. It's supposed to inform the people. News is no longer informative. It's simply propaganda. And you see this, and again, you're getting another wave of it as we have over the last couple of years, and that is these military movies that glorify what we're doing and make you feel good about it, like Sniper and 13 Hours there, the deal at Benghazi. Why are these people attacking Americans where we are? There's reasons behind all this, but the average American doesn't ever get to it. So 17 here, or 16 rather, Merriam-Webster now recognizes newspeak. That's the language of Oceania in Orwell's 84 as a lexical entry. It is defined as propagandistic language marked by euphemism, a mild or vague expression for an offensive or harsh one. Circumlocution, let's use more language than necessary in order to avoid the truth by being vague or evasive. We're good at that. They can ask a question and you can just watch. I've seen it repeatedly with these politicians. They'll be asked a question and they'll say a lot, but they never address the question. And that's the way they operate. And the inversion of the customary meanings of words. You saw that in Oceania in Orwell's book. Ignorance is strength. What? We invert the words to mean something that they don't mean. Again, illegal immigrants are dreamers. Let's make them sound nice. Not that they're criminals. Well, 17, this international aggression has all been waged in the name of the American people. And then, of course, we're to thank them for their service as they go around the world without any mandate, without declaring illegal wars. And we're supposed to be grateful to our military for doing this. No, we're not. We should be grateful for the people who fought and actually died for something that was important. But that's not what we're doing now. We're doing this for the corporations in large measure. Not only, but in large measure. They profit from this. So this has been waged in the name of the American people whose elected representatives in Congress were bought, bribed, and blackmailed to go along with the White House in every single case. There's not one case where Congress has stood up to these idiots and said, you can't do this. Why not? Again, we want to start this thing again. Let's just shoot them all and start again. And that's that. But we can't do that, obviously. I'm not advocating that as a Christian way of dealing with this. But is Marco Rubio doing anything for you that any other politician hasn't done? Well, where's the outrage over this stuff? There isn't any. Because again, this is all so ingrained now into the fabric of society that people just take this as the norm. And that was one of the deals in that movie, or in that book as well, is that there's a constant warfare all the time. Constant warfare. You got to keep people in a state of panic at some level. Constant new epidemic. Constant new threat. Constant new everything. And we got to just be, you should be scared all the time, but live normally while you're frightened to death. Well, how do you do that? That's a psychological game that's going to mess with your mind. You can't do that. The psychology of some of this stuff. And let's not get into the dirty tricks our CIA plays on people. Things like MK Ultra and DARPA and some of these other things they're engaged in behind the scenes. And we know that they were experimenting in many cases with mind control and other psychedelics and other things through the 60s and 70s. And drugging unwitting prisoners, some cases. People that had troubles and problems. So that if they died or disappeared, it was no big loss. Nobody's going to go looking for them. And these are the kinds of things, sadly, that are going on. Well, the elected people, the elected Congress, all that, they just go along with this. When are they going to stand up and say something? You got a bunch of lapdogs. You got a guy who believes, essentially now, that he's all powerful. He's omnipotent. He can do anything he wants to. Because there's no checks any longer on this stuff. And that is the danger. I mean, you know, the old statement, the power corrupts and absolute power corrupts absolutely. And there's something to be said for that. See, authority is supposed to be there to actually help people. That's what it's supposed to be for. It's not there to run roughshod over them. Well, 18, the second phrase used to describe Babylon employs the verb shadad. Which conveys the ideas of dealing in a violent way with someone, devastating or ruining him, and the subsequent spoiling or plundering of the one being attacked. 19, the Theological Word Book of the Old Testament makes the following observation on this verb. The ferocity of this verb is indicated by its coupling with the activities of a wolf, which pursues, attacks, and mauls its victim. Jeremiah chapter 5, verse 6. Therefore, a lion from the forest will slay them. A wolf of the deserts will destroy them. A leopard is watching their cities. Everyone who goes out of them will be torn in pieces because their transgressions are many, their apostasies are numerous. However, once the wolf has dispatched its victim, it generally gorges itself on the kill. A scientist from the U.S. Geological Survey once observed a pack of 15 wolves bring down a 600-pound moose and eat half the carcass in 3 hours. So that's quick. And by the way, if you ever see a 600-pound moose, you better stay away from it. That was one of the first things, you know, they look kind of harmless when you see them. They look sort of dumb and, you know. And, of course, I was raised on Bullwinkle, so, you know, I didn't think moose were threatening. But, you know, that what they tell you is don't worry. That, you know, they won't get you with their horns. They'll stomp you to death. That's how they kill their prey, if they feel threatened, if they want to attack. So, and we saw some, and they're pretty impressive creatures. But to bring down a 600-pound moose, that's pretty impressive, too. After the kill, the wolf consumes the muscle, meat, and fatty tissue from its prey. The heart, lungs, liver, and all internal organs are consumed. The bones are crushed, point C, to get at the marrow. And the wolf will consume bone fragments as well. Even the hair and skin are sometimes consumed. So 20, this same type of behavior is attributed to prophetic Babylon, which attacks, overpowers, and strips its kill of everything it wants. So like the previous phrase, this term is followed by an independent participle that indicates that Babylon actively continues to engage in the deception that allows it to plunder its victims. They continue, the destroyer keeps on destroying, continues to destroy. And 22, this type of ongoing behavior makes it plain that the government is not serving its original purpose. By the way, we have some documents that people don't like to look at or think about that set forth the basis and limitations of our government, particularly at the federal level. And the limitations are far inside of what these people are operating today. Essentially, as we know, they've dispatched with due process in many cases. They're not dealing with they classify people in certain ways. Again, this is the changing of the language, the politically correct speech. We classify them as enemy combatants. This means women and children. And even in the old other passage there, you expect those people not to be slaughtered during times of war. That is a real sign of brutality, of a lack of concern even for basic human rights. So, again, it's not serving its original purpose and is now working against the best interest of the populace. In 23, it has done so by zealously promoting the virtues of the perpetual war economy, which is being foisted on the populace in many surreptitious ways. The American people have become conditioned to accept this all as the new normal. And so once it's accepted as normal, and life just gets into the grind, the everyday living of life, people don't even question it. And you hear it all the time. They don't question what they say. They say what they're told to say. They're reading what the teleprompter tells them to say. And they don't think. And sometimes you can even tell if you watch a newsman close enough. You know, their mind's somewhere else. And as they're reading the teleprompter. I've seen them just lose a track of what they were doing. Whoops. You couldn't even read the teleprompter. That can't be that hard. Well, as one author has observed, the consequences associated with this inescapable responsibility will always manifest in some form of very unpleasant blowback. That blowback has been occurring under the radar as the irreparable tearing of the fabric, the social fabric of American society. The immediate future will bring other unwanted events on American soil, as the karmic repercussions inexorably unfold. That was a guy named Michael Thomas. And there's the website. You can check out his deal on the state of the nation. And I think that was in 2012 he wrote that. Well, it hasn't changed since then. If it has, it's changed for the worse. However, what the things this author calls karmic... See, I don't believe in karma. I mean, only to the extent that you believe in like the law of sowing and reaping. That law governs a lot of things in God's world. Sowing and reaping is a legitimate deal. Karma, eh. There's some mindless force that's going to pay you back. It's not a mindless force. First, it's God who keeps track of these things. So, however, the things this author calls karmic repercussions are actually going to be divine judgments that will put an end to these activities once and for all. And 26, since the situation demands correction. The description of Babylon is followed by two commands from the Lord, one of which is issued to prophetic Elam, and the other issued to prophetic Medea. And 27, the command indicates a united attack of the Elamites and Medes. There will also be other allies in order to bring about the destruction of prophetic Babylon. Jeremiah chapter 50, verse 9. And as we know, again, the Russia's the big ringleader in this. The prophetic Medes. Behold, I am going to arouse and bring up against Babylon a horde of great nations from the land of the north. And that's going to involve Russia and every ally she can convince. And whether she has to convince them by hook or by crooks probably doesn't matter to Russia. I mean, it doesn't mean they have to be convinced in a nice way. They may say, you cooperate with us or we'll blow you off the map. So they will have cooperation, however, in this. So it is difficult to identify a specific people with the Elamites, since Jeremiah indicated that God would break the power of the historical Elamites and scatter their remaining population to the four winds. Now that's in Jeremiah 49, just the previous chapter there, verses 34 through 39. That which came as the word of the Lord to Jeremiah the prophet concerning Elam at the beginning of the reign of Zedekiah, king of Judah, saying, thus says the Lord of the armies, behold, I am going to break the bow of Elam, the finest of their might. I will also bring upon Elam the four winds from the four ends of heaven, and will scatter them to all these winds, and there will be no nation to which the outcasts of Elam will not go. So I will shatter Elam before their enemies, and before those who seek their lives, and bring calamity upon them. Even my fierce anger, declares the Lord, and I will send out the sword after them until I have consumed them. And then I will set my throne in Elam and destroy out of it king and princes, declares the Lord. But it will come about that in the last days I will restore the fortunes of Elam. So we have to look for some last days Elamites. Not necessarily right there on the Arabian Peninsula and all of that. Or east of there, actually. But as we saw in that map down here in this area by the Persian Gulf. There's the Arabian Peninsula over there. So this moves down into the southeast again of Babylon. And somewhat south of the Medes themselves. So what is especially isagogic importantly is that the Elamites kept a large and well-trained army, which was especially famous for its archers, who were armed with a powerful Elamite bow. The historian Strabo spoke of the Elamites as skilled archers, while Herodotus drew attention to the uncommon size of the bows used in that part of the world. And, I remember when I was a kid, my dad had a hunting bow and he liked to hunt. And so he had a bow and I just remember the bow being bigger than I was. And he'd say, well, go ahead and string it. Well, I couldn't string it. I mean, I weighed about 80 pounds soaking wet. And if you ever have a real hunting bow, you have to have some force to be able to string it. But the Elamite bow was apparently sometimes 8, 9, 10 feet. They were huge. They had big bows. And were proficient with them. It's not just as though they had this particular aspect of it. It was that they were proficient with it. So 31, why many interpreters wonder why Elam is mentioned. And why it's mentioned first. Especially since it was generally inferior to both the Median and Persian armies. In terms of size and strength. And in 32, however, given the fact that the Elamites were famed for the Elamite bow and their archery skills, the fact they are named first is likely designed to emphasize the matter of distant warfare, which again was their primary skill. And I believe that in that deal there, I think it's actually verse 9 we just looked at, Jeremiah 50. It emphasizes distant warfare. They will draw up their battle lines against her, Jeremiah 59. From there, she will be taken captive. And so the other passages, and I think this is true in Isaiah here as well, emphasize this matter of distant warfare. That this isn't a close-up warfare, as was typical. Because frankly, you could never capture a city. I don't care how good your archers were, how many you had them. You could besiege it, but you were going to have trouble capturing a city with just bows and arrows. There had to be more to it. That generally was not the only weapon used. But all through these passages of Babylon, that's the only weapon emphasized, are bows and arrows. So 33, given these facts, one may be able to identify the prophetic Elamites by virtue of their nuclear capabilities. Since we know that's what we're dealing with, we can look and say, okay, does anyone here that we know of might fit the bill for this? They're mentioned distinctly from Russia. Of the countries that might be prone to ally themselves with Russia, Pakistan, which is geographically close to the ancient kingdom of Elam, may be the best option. And 34, over the past several years, U.S.-Pakistani relations have soured to the point that Pakistan has actively sought out diplomatic relations with both China and Russia. And 35, Russia is now actively supplying arms and equipment to Pakistan. And additionally, the two countries have been conducting military exercises in 2016, or they began conducting them, and they continue to do so. So they have developed maybe a fast friendship all of a sudden. Well, again, maybe not so fast from the doctrinal sense of it, but the fact is, they are new allies now. They haven't been before. And again, can I prove they are the prophetic Medes? No, if I could, I'd say they are definitely them. But they are a good option, I think. So 36, the second command is to Media. And in both cases, again, these are commands to their military leadership. That's the ones that would be involved in this, who would fulfill the imperatives.
would be the military leadership. So these are the consecrated ones, God's mighty warriors, his proudly exulting ones, mentioned back there in Isaiah 13. At the very beginning, at the outset of that prophecy, he describes them. In verse 3, I have commanded my consecrated ones. I have even called my mighty warriors, my proudly exulting ones. Purpose here, to execute my anger. That's why they're summoned. And 37, the Hebrew verb tsur, to lay siege, is used of military actions and means to relentlessly attack an opponent's stronghold. The siege involved cutting off supplies, especially water was critical, 2 Samuel 12:27, and making certain that none of those inside the walls escaped. Scratch the word wood there, that should just read inside the walls, that they escaped. You didn't want to, that was part of the deal there, 2 Samuel 12. Was to, if they tried to get out and escape, you were there to kill them. You were not there to let them get away. 27. And Joab sent messengers to David saying, I have fought against Rabbah. I have even captured the city of waters. And that's the way you had to, and again, this is why it worked so well in the fall of ancient Babylon. They went in through the water supply, essentially. Because that was something you had to have. Well, 38, the tactics included building a mound to reach the wall and using battering rams and towers to breach it. Thus, the inhabitants of a besieged city were threatened by both sword and famine. I mean, they were going to die one way or the other. If you were besieged a long time and you couldn't get any supplies or people in and out, well, it was just a matter of time. But Babylon was situated in such a way and was so large and had so many resources that they could, the Persians actually under Cyrus would have given up because they saw there was no way to take the city with their conventional form of warfare. But again, human ingenuity. And maybe God was in the fall of Babylon and put that idea in Cyrus' mind. Who knows? Well, 39, this figure perfectly represents the outcome of an attack on Babylon. No one will escape, and all will die by sword or famine. That Revelation 6 passage there in the sixth seal, I believe it was. Oh, actually, I take that back. This is the four horsemen, the fourth of the four horsemen. I looked and behold an ashen horse, and he who sat on it had the name Death. And Hades was following with him. And authority was given to him over a fourth of the earth. Again, not a fourth of the population, a fourth of the landmass. Later on, when he wants to discuss population, he'll say a third of the people were killed. And then we know he's talking population-wise. But here he's speaking of land and how they're going to die. To kill with sword, that's in warfare. Famine, the result of warfare. The starvation that will set in for those who can't get food. Pestilence, the nuclear rot that will descend on these, the radiation poisoning and all of that. And then by the wild beasts of the earth. Again, not domesticated animals, but feral-type creatures who will be scavenging for food because they won't have any. And they're going to, human meat's just as good to them as anything else. So that will eventually, like a siege, that will eventually get rid of the entire population. They'll either die in the war or they'll die because of the results of it. Well, 40, the final statement of verse 2 may be understood in one of two ways, depending upon how one takes the third person feminine singular suffix, which is attached to the noun groaning. Some apply the suffix to Babylon and understand it to mean that the attacking armies will put a quick end to their victim's groans as she dies. That she's the one groaning, i.e. because of the attack. Most interpreters, however, take the term to mean the groaning she had caused, which would refer to those who suffered under Babylon's treachery and oppression. And see, the second view makes the most sense, since this is the only place the noun is actually used with a third-person suffix. her groaning. And D, additionally, the destruction of Babylon is an event that brings rest to the earth, which suggests that those on the earth have been groaning or suffering under Babylon's oppression. And again, I was going to do this chapter, but again, I think it's really only peripheral in some ways to the actual study here. So I decided to let chapter 14 go. Because it really is dealing with a relationship between the leadership of Babylon and Satan, the power behind the scenes. And it morphs in from a taunt against the king of Babylon to the son of the dawn, of Lucifer. It moves to that. And talks about these in terms of what will happen. So, as it says here in verse 6, it's talking about Babylon, the scepter of rulers, which used to strike the peoples in fury with unceasing strokes, which subdued the nations in anger with unrestrained persecution. Let's not call us peacekeeping forces. Let's call it persecution. Let's call it what it is. Let's quit putting good names on this stuff and call them what they really are, as God sees it under the divine viewpoint. The whole earth is at rest and quiet. Why? Because there's nobody to beat us to death anymore. And so they're very happy about it. And then Jeremiah chapter 50. Verse 34. Their Redeemer is strong. The Lord of the armies is his name. He will vigorously plead their case so that he may bring rest to the earth. How do we get rest? Well, you get rid of the bully. You go beat the bully, take him out, and then everybody can relax. But turmoil to the inhabitants of Babylon. And again, we see a list not designed to be extensive or exhaustive, that every form, all the inhabitants, the various categories, will be taken out. A sword against the Chaldeans, against the inhabitants of Babylon, against her officials and wise men. A sword against the oracle priests, and they will become fools. A sword against her mighty men, and they will be shattered. A sword against their horses and against their chariots, and against all the foreigners who are in the midst of her. And they will all become women. A sword against her treasures, and they will be plundered. And that will be it. And that's all it will take. Okay, well, this is the week that we observe, or the month that we observe the Lord's table. So we will stop there today, and let's get into position for that as we observe that ritual.